it's done.
Connor McDavid! It's not real!
The goal of the year?
Panarin!
Part of the past. The celebrations? Forgotten. The history?
Vegas Golden Knights!
History.
Win.
We're back to a blank slate. Clean ice. All that matters now is what happens next. The Stanley Cup Playoffs.
Eastern Conference Final begins Wednesday.
Welcome to the College Football Survivor Show, where playoff survival is always on the line. Here's Shahan Jeyaraja and Babak Hayeri.
Hey, everybody. It's the College Football Survivor Show. I'm Babak Hayeri with my co-host, Shahan Jeyaraja, national college football writer for CBS Sports. We're glad to have you with us. Last week was a draft and some spring games, so we're going to talk about both. First, we're going to take a look at the draft fit of some of the guys we like, and then we're going to take a quick look at who might go number one in next year's draft, a way too early look. Finally, we're going to recap a bit of the spring action as most of the teams are done except Washington. So more things to talk about here. But before we dive in, let me remind you that you can find us on X and TikTok at CFB Survivor Show, where we have video highlights and run polls, and you can give us your feedback. Please, if you can, take a moment to like, rate, and subscribe to us wherever you get your podcast. So, Shahan, that was a mob scene. I could not believe what I was seeing on some of the videos of how many people showed up in Detroit. Now, there are things to do in Detroit. This isn't just like, well, no, let's just go to downtown. I mean, I know we had a reporter down there, and the comment he said to me was, I have never seen more drunk people in one place in my entire life. And he had the numbers to back it. I think the NFL estimated the crowd at like 275,000 people just on Thursday night. That was insane. That was incredible. What did you make of all of that?
My favorite tweet that I saw was somebody asked, with all of these like middle-aged men drunk in the middle of town to watch some kids walk across the stage, how many of these people missed their kids' graduations? Like, how many didn't go to that and then went to the NFL draft to watch essentially NFL graduation? But it was wild. It's funny being a college guy and growing up in an NFL town in Dallas, of course, because I think that so many people who love college just don't understand how big the NFL is relative to college, how small potatoes college football is relative to the NFL. And that's not to say anything like negative about college football. That's just like the NFL is so much bigger than not just any other sport in America, but any other thing in America. It's like the NFL and like presidential politics, and nothing else remotely comes close. Now, of course, once you get overseas, like EPL, that sort of stuff, you know, it gets close. But in America, it's nuts. You have 250,000 people show up to see, you know, the Lions not even have a very good pick. Who did the Lions even take this year? I guess Terrion Arnold from Alabama, right? Like with the 24th pick. So they didn't even come out just to see like a cool Detroit guy get picked necessarily. It was a good Michigan year for the draft, of course. That does help a little bit. But yeah, the NFL is crazy. Frankly, like stuff like that to a certain extent too is also why I'm like, ooh, man, being NFL media isn't the most attractive thing to me because I don't know if I want to have to fight through all of that. But an exciting day. One other thing too is, this is just more emphasis on why we need more sort of geographical representation in these big events, right? Like everybody's like, oh, we'll just do everything in New York, do everything in LA. They don't care. They don't care. You go to Detroit, those people care. You go to Green Bay like they're going to do next year, those people care. You know, since we're staying in the NFC North, you can go to Chicago too. I don't care. That's fine. But like, I love taking this sort of thing on the road, especially, to be frank, especially an event that nobody really cares about the location that much, right? Like nobody really cares where the NFL draft is. So take it to places that are maybe less served. This is one thing too that I think the NFL does really well. I'm a huge NBA fan. That's you know, one of my first loves. And the amount of people who complain, like, why did we put the All-Star game in Utah when like tons of people showed up and loved it? Like, shut up, man. Like, it's cool whenever fans who don't usually get served.
The only joke I did appreciate on Twitter was that because Green Bay, it's like, sorry, everyone, the two hotels are already fully booked. Because that's going to be, wow. I mean,
it's gonna be
Green
hell.
Bay has its charms, but if they're never, I strongly doubt, maybe I'll be proven wrong, they'll come anywhere close to the mall. Now, what I'm looking forward to, and as far as I know, they haven't booked it there yet, but there's all the reasons they could. The NFL draft in the French Quarter would be phenomenal. I can even pick the location. It's at like one parking lot on Decatur and roughly like St. Louis, where I remember when they had the national championship for college football there right before the pandemic. It was like this huge where they did the fan fest and all this stuff. It's right off of the it's like a block from Jackson Square. I mean, you could do it on Bourbon Street. That would be the ultimate, like, we're gonna have the rowdiest crowd in history, and potentially some things you shouldn't see in the background. But, you know, this will be, oh my gosh, I hope they schedule that ASAP, because after seeing what happened in Detroit, hearing about it from people on the ground, I want to see it in New Orleans. That will be must-see TV. That will be better than the episode of Cops that was filmed there a long time ago. I'm really old, but I just remember it was like the best episode of Cops when I was growing up as a kid was the one in New Orleans during Mardi Gras, because I'd never seen police people like seriously freak out as they were on horseback. Like, you know, there's I love New Orleans. I love the city.
Yeah, it's a good time. They are hosting the Super Bowl there in 2026, I believe. So it's coming. We're going to get some chaos. It's going to be a lot of fun.
That's the bougie version of it.
Yeah,
I know
it is.
That touches on it. This is the ultimate people's NFL. Yeah. Like, you just have to show up and get plastered, or if you choose it or not, and enjoy the event. So I love it. That's a people's event, the NFL draft. So turning things around now, it's so funny. We were talking about what we were going to talk about, like discuss on this show beforehand. We talked about looking at the draft fit of some of the players. And before we dive into how they fit into the scheme, I thought it'd be fun to take a look, because for those who aren't familiar with us, especially Shahan is one of the best, snappiest dressers there are in college football. If you had a chance to see the footage of us on the field before Houston, you'll see both of us dressed in our own ways, pretty different. I tend to look like an aging rock star. Shahan looks like a sharp dressed young man. You're not a young man anymore. You have a kid. You're not. But I mean, but you know,
I'm 30 now. I don't think I'm young anymore.
No, but knowing what we know, we're not totally alien to the realm of fashion. The draftees, they I love it. They take an opportunity to kind of show their flair, to show what they look like. Did any of them catch your eye?
Well, I want to first touch on Caleb Williams, because he's obviously known as a fashionista. I was a little underwhelmed. It was fine, but like, I think it was just the way that it fit and was styled. It almost, like, when I first saw it, I was like, is he wearing like a tracksuit? Like just the way that it was kind of fitting him. I understand the idea behind it. I think it needed a little more. And I think the other thing too is that, like, with Caleb Williams specifically, you're used to seeing him accessorized to such a crazy extent that this felt a little muted, relatively speaking. It wasn't a bad fit at all, but I think that it just, with the expectations that came with being Caleb Williams, it was a little underwhelming, I'd say. And he also is in the midst of like growing out his hair, is what he said. And so it looked a little like casual, all of it, just compared to what Caleb Williams usually does. I think that number one has to be Terrion Arnold. The bright pink suit, of course, going to Detroit, that was tremendous. That was a really, really good look. It fit him perfectly. That's one thing that I think gets lost sometimes in this stuff, is that it's not just about what you wear, but it's about how it fits you as well. And it looked really good. It's like a pink brocade suit. He styled it perfectly. It looked really, really good. The other ones that kind of stuck out to me was LSU's receivers. Apparently, their wide receivers coach actually paid for them to get suits made. And I think it was, I think it was Malik Nabers had like a really just kind of sleek outside suit. And there was some great lining on the inside as well, with I think it was some of his highlights or something. So
it was.
I thought that was very well done. look, not everybody needs to go and get like the bright pink suit. I think that not everybody can get away with that. And it's not even just about like style. I think it's just the whole package. When you do basics well, I think that can look even better than trying something different.
Yeah, it was interesting to watch how folks were dressed. I thought an interesting kind of conservative approach, but also some of the guys went totally conservative. They did, you know, black jacket, black shirt, black pants. It can look really nice. Although part of me is like, well, it almost looks like you could also be attending. Are you attending the draft? Or are you attending the funeral of the team that picked you? You know, kind of angle. But I think there were ways to also splash it up. I thought Marvin Harrison Jr., he went with head-to-toe Louis Vuitton, you know, tried and true brand of people who were kind of, you know, the baller kind of approach. But it was nice. It had a nice kind of glitter to it, some nice stuff there. He had that interesting Lion King pendant, which I thought, again, kind of a reference, obviously, to his respected father with a photo of, probably had an image of like Mufasa and Simba. I thought that was a nice one. They were kind of looking at each other. Caleb Williams was interesting because I know Chrome Hearts. That's who made his stuff. I've been known to wear jewelry sometimes. And Chrome Hearts, actually, I don't like their jewelry, but their glasses. I've worn Chrome Hearts glasses for 12 years now. Like, I have 3 pairs. They're my favorite glasses. Clothing, I didn't know they did. It was an interesting, conceptually, it was more interesting than it was. It was a dark navy, double-breasted zip-up suit, which kind of looked like something between the suit and the hoodie had a kid. I thought it was interesting. I mean, he did the whole manicure. I think one of his nails matched his girlfriend's dress. I thought that was a cute thing to do. But it was more interesting on paper. It had like Chrome Hearts are known for like their kind of elaborate crosses. So it had some of those. Jane Daniels, who was also nice. It looked like actually something you might wear regularly. That's what, if you haven't seen it, it was like a light blue. He had a white shirt. All it really needed was a tie. Dallas Turner went the straight up double breasted minty suit. The color suited him, but I'm double breasted, man. I just can't get into it. I remember I grew up when those were really popular, but he had just a gorgeous set of frames. And then, you know, the other thing is he had like one of those big blinged out medallions. A couple of guys had that. Now, I'm not one to point fingers at those who like to wear bling. I've been known to wear my own fair share of stuff, but I thought those are kind of cute. But I thought JC Latham had a nice brooch with his initials on it. I mean, I could go in and in on this, but the only thing is, please guys, if you're wearing a suit, wear socks. Please wear socks. It looks so weird seeing guys like Malik Neighbors. I like how he dressed, but then you see him with this, like, these nice, I think they were Louis Vuitton shoes, and, like, no socks. And it ends up looking like you're wearing capris.
It's a look, man. People are into that. I don't do it personally. But, like, the other thing, too, is that if you do, like, because the style that's in right now, especially for a very athletic build, is to have a shorter pant, is to not have a pant that goes all the way down. If you do that, you have to pick. You either go with the no-show socks or you go with like long socks. Now, again, I tend to
Okay, can we time out here? The fiasco is Drake May, because he wore socks that kind of showed up on his sneakers, and then you just don't know what you're trying to do. That's like the guy who wears suspenders and a belt at the same time. Like, pick a lane. You know, those were awkward. That was a shot at him where I'm like, ooh, okay, the no-show socks, I can at least conceptually understand. But he wore socks that just were tall enough to show a swoosh.
Yeah.
Because there's nothing wrong with wearing sneakers. I'm not going to disrespect that. Yes, they have finally reached the level where I think you can wear sneakers with a suit. But that was like, ooh, you should have gone one way or the other.
And he went to Air Jordan University too, right? Like, that's the whole thing too. Yeah. He went to the University of North Carolina. He had the Carolina Blues. So like that worked. I do think it's very fitting that Drake May had the like nice, very clean suit, but also just like, didn't exactly know what he was doing with it. Like, that dude is all about football. That dude does not know anything except football. Exactly. I did laugh a little bit. There was nothing wrong with his look, but JJ McCarthy, there was a photo of him when he got to the Vikings practice facility after, and somebody was like, this is a 9-year-old at a wedding. And it was so
his body language, the kind of baggy suit, it was that nailed it. That was one of the funniest things I read.
It was fine. Like, but it is one of those things where it's just like, he just like went to the store and bought a suit off the rack and bought the right colored tie and then showed up to the facility. That's what he did. And so, no, I think, Look, I love personally, it's like you said, it's no secret. I love to dabble in the fashion game. I think that because to make a comparison to another event that happened this weekend as well, the White House Correspondents' Dinner, and John Fetterman shows up in a hoodie. I'm sick and tired of this, man. I'm done with this. We need to stop this. During the pandemic, we got to a point where we're like, what if we never dressed up ever again and only wore sweatpants? And I am done with it. Show up to events that are good and wear things that are good. You look better that way. And you can wear things that are still comfortable at the same time. I'm sick and tired of it. I need society to return to its rightful place. But I think that the NFL draft, they did a really good job overall of bringing this style. And I want more of it. I want more events, especially for men's fashion, because women always know that they're supposed to dress up. I actually hosted an event last week down at my alma mater, Baylor, and it was like an athletic awards banquet. And like the women like were all dressed in like cocktail dresses and super nice stuff. And like half the men were like fitted up, like did a great job. And then like probably a third of them just wore like a polo and jeans. And I'm like, come on, man, this is an awards banquet. You're supposed to bring it. But anyway, I digress. But I was glad to see the fits. I think overall they did a good job.
I think we could thank the NBA for this rise in men's fashion, though, for sure. I think they've definitely popularized it. And one last thought on the suit linings. I have to say, Terrion Arnold's, you know, that we mentioned that electric salmon silk floral print. First of all, you can be comfortable if it's fitted, and it was absolutely custom made. But he had a nice kind of tasteful image on the inside of him in his youth, and I think his teammates. Like the lining we were talking about, the LSU guys, sometimes it's so colorful on like a suit that's super conservative, you almost figure it reminds me of lizards that like get really big to scare predators. Like they have like frills that stick out, like all those bright colors. I'm like, they're going to open up the jacket. I'm blinded. I'm not going to mug you. And then you can run off because I've been blinded by the inside of the suit. But anyway, we could really go off the deep end on this fashion thing, but we should probably
went a little longer than I expected.
Yeah. But you know, moving on to the actual fit, there were a lot. I mean, a lot's been said about all the different picks. Were there some players that, good or bad, you thought were interesting decisions and how they might fit into their teams heading into the league?
Yeah, I do want to touch. I mean, obviously, people probably know that I'm a Bears fan, but this was the first time where through 10 picks, I'm like, wait, did the Bears win? Did they do the thing? Did they not mess this up? And I mean, when you compare what Caleb Williams is going to be stepping into compared to Justin Fields or Mitchell Trubisky or whichever Bears quarterback you want to talk about, I put out a tweet, and after thinking about it, I feel even more strongly about it. I think that there's a real case that five of the top eight offensive players of the 21st century for the Bears will be on the team next year. You know, you put Matt Forte to the side, you put Brandon Marshall to the side, but Caleb, Romo Dunze, I mean, you can even throw DeAndre Swift in there, Cole Kmet, and then that receiver room, right? With Keenan Allen, and of course with DJ Moore coming back. That's a crazy group, and you also have an offensive line that's pretty good. So like, I just think that it's not just that they picked Caleb Williams, who I've come around. I'm Caleb pilled. Like I'm into it. But I think it's also just like what they've done around him, getting Romo Dunze at 9. That's somebody who you hope can be long-term a franchise receiver as well. It's impressive what they did. So I think that they certainly were winners of the draft. So next up though, I want to talk about, I do not understand how we let this happen as a society. Joey, I hope you're listening to this, Patriots fan. How did we let Drake May fall to number 3? He was so clearly the second best quarterback in the draft. I thought he was closer to number 1 potentially than number 3, but somehow the NFL draft industrial complex talked itself into Jaden Daniels being the second best quarterback on the board and the most Washington Commanders pick of all time. And like, come on, man. Drake May, he's not perfect. I want to be clear, but he just like, he's got it, man. Like he is such a complete player. There's going to be a lot of talk about, oh, well, he didn't manage the pocket. Like, play behind a bad offensive line and manage to create throwing lanes every single week. He was so good last year. He projects so well to this next level. Again, there are going to be people who say, well, you know, his second year as a starting quarterback wasn't as good as his first year. Yeah, because all of his good players graduated and Josh Downs is in the NFL now. I don't understand how we overthink this stuff every single year. So Drake May in New England, that's unfortunately going to be a tremendous hit.
John, I have to ask you, though, because everyone's talking about it. What do we make of the Falcons? I love the reactions of draft experts watching live, you know, of when they watch that pick come down, because you just spent $100 million on Kirk Cousins and you bring it and apparently anger him, or at least disquiet his camp, however they say it, you know, charitably. I mean, what do we make of this? I mean, you've hired a guy who's, you know, he's a veteran, a grizzled veteran who's been in college for a number of years, suffered a bunch of injuries. You put him at number 8. Oh, wow. I mean, one analysis I read is we don't know how to value quarterbacks. It's like we either value them too high or we value them too low. So you end up with, there are very few quarterbacks in the middle of the draft. But can you guess what they were thinking?
Well, I like Michael Penix a lot. I think that there is a world where he hits. And when you project him to that next level, I think that he's one of the most pro-ready quarterbacks of this group in a lot of ways because of the offense that he played in. But that's what makes this so odd, is that why would you draft out of all of the quarterbacks Michael Penix to sit and wait? Like, that's not what you do with Michael Penix. That's what you do with Spencer Rattler. That's what you do with, you know, Joe Milton. You don't do that with Michael Penix. So it's not necessarily just that I think that it was a bad pick at 8. It was a reach. There's no doubt. It sounds like, maybe there were people swirling around who were interested in Michael Penix, and it wasn't likely that he was going to fall to that pick. But at the same time, it's like you are in a position where you just invested a lot of money into a win now team with Kirk Cousins. So it's not just about the value of picking Michael Penix. It's about the wasted value of not trying to create the best team around Kirk Cousins that you can, because you committed to him for at least 2 years for huge money. You can get out of his contract after 2 years, potentially with some penalty. But like, why are you not saying, we put all of this into our franchise? Like, it just shows ultimately a lack of decision, right? Like a lack of decisiveness from that franchise to say, we are going to pick a quarterback because we're not actually bought into the plan that we just agreed to. And so that's the thing that's insane about it to me. I think that Michael Penix Jr., again, there's a path where he is great, where he is a really good player. They're going to have to keep him upright. They're going to have to keep him healthy. He's going to have to continue to grow as an intermediate passer. But that's just the thing to me. You know, I know last week we talked about it a little bit. Why is Michael Penix not considered in that top group of quarterbacks? I mean, the two answers are very simple. It's one, he's old. So yes, you know, when you're 24, 25, you should be a better quarterback than guys who are 19. And two, his injury history. Both of his knees he's had issues with, his shoulders he's had issues with. To project him to come in and be safe, like, it doesn't make any sense. And you mentioned 6 quarterbacks in the top 12 picks of this draft, and then not another pick at quarterback until 150 in the 5th round when Spencer Rattler goes. Just an insane year for quarterbacks. I do also want to say on this, I think that some of the rush to pick quarterbacks this year has to do with teams looking at the 2025 quarterback class and not being all that impressed. Carson Beck, Quinny Ewers, Shedeur Sanders, guys who I think will get picked in the first round, but there's nobody, much less 3 guys who I think will be competing for the number 1 pick next year. And certainly I'm sure we'll get to that in a second.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, Bo Nix, by the way, because I mean, he was the other one who we thought would go. By the way, I just want to say, I the idea of Cousins and Penix having, it's such a bad pick, but it makes for compelling drama. The more I think about it, it's like, I kind of want to see it now. It could be a fictionalized movie about that kind of an awkward situation. We just spent $100 million on this guy. Oh, by the way, this guy's now coming in to take your place. And watching them like grow to, I mean, I don't know, it could be a disaster. But Bo Nix, he goes to the Broncos. it seems like that's a slightly better fit in the sense that it seems like there might be, they have a kind of a healthy idea, like just let him compete, see how they go. But if he's a project, he's a project. They still expended pick number 12 on him. But I'm trying to figure out that one, too, because I remember at one point, one of the draft projections had Penix going to the Broncos. And I think that's because no one thought that Atlanta in their wildest dreams would decided to pick him. So what do you make of that one?
Well, I think that Bo Nix at 12, well, yes, I think it is still too high. I think that that's more the like, it's more of a logical pick because one, you don't really trust what you have there at quarterback right now if you're the Broncos. And so like with Bo Nix, you're trying to get, I mean, in a funny way, you're trying to get like year four version of Kirk Cousins with this pick, right? You're just trying to get to like average to above average quarterback play because you feel like the rest of your roster is in a pretty good place. So I think that that makes sense. Again, a little too high for my liking. Number 12, that's a pretty high pick. The crazy thing about this draft, too, is that there were no defensive players picked in the first 14 picks of this draft. Just a bizarre kind of year. Now, some of that has to just do with like who came out, who didn't come out, by the way. There are some guys who might have been in contention for the top 15, notably from Ohio State, who didn't end up coming out. And next year is going to be, by all indications, a pretty good defensive class. So it is situational, but the first 14 picks, all offensive players, just really strange, frankly. And I think, though, again, the Bo Nix pick feels a little bit more logical to me just because of what the Broncos have and what they're thinking going forward. But like, what a weird quarterback room this is. Bo Nix, Jarrett Stidham, Zach Wilson. That's some stuff, I guess. That's some stuff that's happening, but I don't know, man. Six in the top 12 is still just crazy to think about.
One more pick I wanted to mention because it was fascinating to see how it came through in a trade. Xavier Worthy going to the Kansas City Chiefs. Like everyone was like, you just gave them the fastest player. Andy Reid and Patrick Mahomes are going to come up with a way to use him. That was one of the most amusing picks to see happen because, you know, do the Chiefs have enough at wide receiver room? That's an open question, but he's absolutely, it seems like a logical fit for how, what they use and what they're going to need.
No, I liked that a lot. Look, I think that Xavier Worthy isn't a perfect football player. He's had some drop issues over the year. And so, like, there's going to be one or two hilarious moments like there was last year with the Kansas City Chiefs where he has a wide-open touchdown or something. Like, that's probably going to happen. Also, Patrick Mahomes, different kind of quarterback than he got to play with when he was at Texas. But, what they've done this offseason in the wide receiver room, I just love it. I really do because, you know, they come in and they decide, you know, we need to stretch the field again. We need to punish teams for going too high on us. And I think that that Xavier Worthy is a perfect pick from that perspective. The fastest player in NFL Combine history, of course, with a 4.21. It's going to be a lot of fun. I can't wait to see how that one ultimately works itself out. I'll also mention one more. I want to get away from the quarterbacks. We talked a lot about the quarterbacks. I spent some time roasting the Commanders for what they did in the first round, but I actually love what they did in the second round. Actually, like, they had a tremendous second round because they get Johnny Newton at pick 36, who to me might be the best defensive player on the entire board, and they get him at 36. This was a really good second round. They get Mike Sanders still from Michigan to play slot corner, and some people were like, well, what are you doing? Why are you picking a slot corner in the second round? But like, welcome to 2024, man. This is football now. You got to be able to cover that slot at a high level. Just look at some of those receivers that were picked high in the draft. And with their third pick, they picked one of my favorite players overall, Ben Sinnott, the tight end from Kansas State. Did I mention him on the last show as well? I know that I mentioned Mike Sanders still as a potential guy to watch. So really, the Commanders in the second round, once they got past that weird stuff that they did picking Jaden Daniels number one, I love what they did in the second round. And I think that these are all guys who are going to be major contributors for them.
One last guy I'm going to mention, only because it was, we talked about the Bears potentially winning the draft. We're talking about their offense, but their whole offense, because if things don't go quite right with Caleb and Rome and all those guys, they also got Torrey Taylor, Iowa's legendary punter, you know, fourth round pick. But, you know, when a punter's a fourth round pick, you know you're getting something. So they are going to be completely a well-rounded offensive unit. And then and Caleb needs a little while to get used to the ropes. They've got someone to kick him out of trouble. and again, you know, Will Riker got picked, which, as I recall, means Nick Saban, at the end of his career, now that he's retired, has had someone picked in every single position in the NFL. And that is awesome. That's all I got to say about that. Well, when we come back, we'll talk a little bit about who might go number one in next year's draft here on the College Football Survivor Show.
The College Football Survivor Show, where playoff survival is always on the line.
So that was the 2024 draft. We're now done with it. Now we can start that classic maneuver. Let's take a way too early look next year, not just who's going to be drafted. We can guess who's going to be drafted, but who do we think is going to be the number one player in the 2025 NFL draft? Who's your call and how did you get there?
No, it's a great question. So we will mention FanDuel put out some initial odds for their number one pick. Plus 100, we've got Shedeur Sanders. Plus 300, Carson Beck. Plus 300, Quinn Ewers. Plus 850, Drew Aller. Plus 950, Jalen Milroe. Plus 1200, Jackson Dart. I'll tell you what, I sure as hell am not picking a quarterback for my number one expectation.
You're not putting the house payment on Drew Aller?
Gosh, what are we doing here? Now, it's worth always saying these sports books, their job is to try and take money from you, and mm-hmm. I respect it. They did a tremendous job putting together a board that I think will steal a lot of money from people. So there's a couple things that you need to take into account whenever you're projecting for number one. One is certainly positional value. Quarterback is going to be top on the board, but if they don't think that you're a franchise quarterback, like, they're not going to waste a pick on you. They're just not. I think that offensive tackle can be a really heavy one, but this was a great tackle year this year. I don't think it's going to be that necessarily next year. This is actually, I think this next year going to be a really, really good defensive line class. So that's certainly one that that I think will come to the forefront in a lot of ways. It's some very good defensive players overall. I think that you can make the case. So with my pick, I'm going to go with somebody who has kind of emerged as maybe that next-gen edge rusher, and that's James Pierce from Tennessee. He had 10 sacks this year for Tennessee, was an all-SEC first-team member, a really special player. He was actually only a second-year guy this year, was the highest-graded defensive end in the SEC as well, and 12th in the FBS, and he's got everything that you want in a potential edge rusher. 6'5", 242, I think that he potentially could add a little bit more weight. I think that he also has the ability to either be a stand-up or a hand-down edge rusher as well. And the other piece, too, is he's playing on a Tennessee team that faces many of the best teams in the country. So he'll get a chance to play against some of these elite level offensive tackles. And if he's able to continue to have success in 2024, there's no reason that James Pierce can't be the number one pick. A defensive player coming from Josh Heupel's system, wouldn't that be something?
Yeah, I agree. There's some great defensive linemen out there. I mean, in addition, and I agree, Pierce is absolutely one of them. You've got the two guys coming out of Ohio State, JTT, Jack Sawyer. You've got Mason Graham out of Michigan, who struck me that I'm like, wait, he can't, like, I didn't realize how young he was until later. I mean, there's some fascinating guys on that defense. I mean, and it sounds like, you know, one of the guys who I think is a realistic chance. I'm not going to say I don't know if anyone's guaranteed at this, but we're not going into a year like Caleb Williams was heading into this season where everyone was just like, all right, it's going to be him. And then we'll figure out the rest of everybody. Travis Hunter, though, I mean, he does play both ways. Obviously, he's a tremendous athletic talent. It seems like he would probably be used as a defensive player if he's drafted. But he's someone who, just for, you know, the versatility, his ability to just keep going, never come off the field, his talent, his ball skills, his ability to just cover anyone you put him on. It seems like he would have a path there as being another example of a potential defender going number one in the draft. And again, I'm not saying I think he's necessarily the front runner, but he's certainly a realistic contender.
No, I really like that pick. I think he has a chance to be the best player in the draft coming in. It's going to be interesting. And, you know, Colorado is going to be a fascinating story one way or another when it comes to projecting, right? Obviously, you mentioned Shedeur Sanders on this list of odds, number one. I would be pretty surprised by number one. I think he will be a top 10 pick. But, you know, with Travis Hunter, you've got a player who, like you said, is everything at cornerback. He's got the pedigree being a former number one overall pick. He has competed for All-America consideration. He's an elite punt returner, kick returner, wide receiver, cornerback. I think that a couple things will come into this. One, his health, right? Obviously, last year he dealt with some injury issues and some health issues. So I think you need to feel pretty good about that. I'd like to see him gain a little bit of weight just because he is so skinny at the collegiate level. I think as an NFL team, you probably have to feel like, well, you know, we feel good about the ability to train him up and get him to add strength at that next level. But I think that is something that you'd like to see just a little bit more of. But overall, I think that he is up there as a potential top end pick. You know, a couple others that come to mind for me, you know, I think Kelvin Banks from Texas is potentially offensive tackle one in this class. He had a down sophomore year, relatively speaking, but a lot was put on him as well after really a tremendous, tremendous first year. A couple other guys at defensive tackle, you know, I think potentially from Michigan, right? It's coming out this year. You got Mason Graham. Mason Graham was somebody who was such a big part of that team this past season. And I think that, you know, he's somebody who I think could continue to grow. And Kenneth Grant as well is the other defensive tackle from Michigan. Both of them will be in that top 5 to 10 conversation. The funny thing, there was actually a stat put out, and I know that we have a lot of Ohio State listeners, so I don't want to make them too mad. But, you know, when we talk about Michigan over the past couple of years. Over the last 2 years, they had more NFL draft picks than anybody with 22, more than Alabama's 20, Georgia's 18, Texas 16. And then over the past 5 years, they're third, 46 draft picks, just behind Alabama at 48, Georgia at 49. And it's worth noting, they have three potential first round picks in the 2025 NFL draft with those two defensive tackles, Colston Loveland at tight end, and actually that doesn't even mention Will Johnson at cornerback as well. So four potential first-round picks in the 2025 NFL draft. So this draft this past year, Michigan, of course, led the way with the most draft picks in this draft. They actually might have even more that aren't even eligible as yet to be drafted because they're sophomores. So it just goes to show you how crazy a team that was.
Yeah, absolutely. I think it's just a note, because obviously Harbaugh had predicted they would beat the NFL draft record. They came close, which is not to say that it was a disappointment.
Slackers.
Only 13 were picked in the NFL draft. And it was interesting because they were bulked more in the middle than anything, which is, again, that's not bad. That means you got good talent across the board. You know, one other name that I'm surprised hasn't come up as much in terms of projecting the draft, and I wonder if it's because his slow decision to stay and then transfer may have influenced it, because we hear Carson Beck, we hear Shedeur Sanders, Quinn Ewers, Jalen Milroe, but Cam Ward seems like he could, I don't even want to call him a dark horse, because if Miami and that offense is looking awfully good, especially after they got Martinez to join them as a running back. I mean, they have Restrepo, they've got a great just talent across the board. If Cam Ward takes off in Miami, I mean, he was projected as a top 100 pick in this draft. He could launch himself up to the top again. I mean, am I crazy to think that? I think like a number one quarterback at Miami, again, assuming Miami kicks it to the next level, and we'll see if Mario Cristobal can do that. I think he would jump into the conversation in a way I'm actually surprised I don't see him yet.
Well, I think from my perspective, Cam Ward is a lottery pick, right? Like a lottery ticket, in that the upside for him, I think, is incredibly high. But I think that part of what's made him interesting is that we haven't really seen him in structure before. That's going to change this year. We're going to get a chance to see him surrounded by talent on a team that expects to win. And so, for example, if he comes in and continues to turn over the ball and continues to have a lot of fumbles, that's going to push him down a board. But you talk about who they're bringing in. Next to Xavier Restrepo, they also bring in Sam Brown, who was Houston's top receiver this past year, a legitimate top 10 wide receiver in the portal. Damon Martinez, as you mentioned, offensive line-wise, they've continued to build up. They've done a great job on the defensive side as well, and they were pretty good on that end last year. So, like, I think that this is a, if Miami ends up winning the ACC and Cam Ward throws for 4,200 yards, not only will I do I think that that'll put him in the top 10 conversation, I mean, it could put him in the Heisman race. That's the other part of this too, right? Where, you know, you see a player like that suddenly step up and make people realize, oh, this is a great player. I think that that is a good high-value pick. Again, when I look at the quarterbacks for 2025, Carson Beck is great. He's going to start in the NFL for 10 years, but I don't see the upside necessarily in the same way that I do with a Cam Ward. I think Shedeur Sanders, that's like such a tough one. I'll be so fascinated to see how NFL talent evaluators truly see him once they have a full 2 years of FBS tape on him. You know, I think that there's a pathway, but it's a tough pathway, I would consider it. Look, I'm not going to put Drew Aller or Jackson Dart number one on my quarterback board next year. Quinn Ewers, I think also, you know, 2 years of tape, a lot of good, some bad. I think people kind of know what he is at this point. Now, he improved a lot from year one to year two as a starter, so maybe there's upside there. And certainly as a recruit, he was a perfect 1,000 recruit in the 247 composite ratings, the first since Vince Young to do that at quarterback. So, like, maybe it's still there for him if his decision-making just fundamentally like hits another level. But I do think that out of the quarterbacks, the guy who probably has the highest ceiling of the group just might be Cam Ward.
Well, I can't wait. We'll put our bets in this week and we'll see where they go. But wrapping things up with the draft, let's move on to just kind of, I mean, again, we're going to assume Washington's spring game will be fine and all that. But everyone else is basically done. So what are some of the thoughts you have now that the spring games have wrapped up? I mean, we can look more generally. I mean, this past weekend, we wrapped up with some interesting teams. We had Oregon when we saw Dylan Gabriel looks great. Dante Moore will probably be his backup. I mean, Nebraska, Dylan Raiola apparently has impressed. Every take I've read about him is that he is going to be the starter. Heading into the fall, and good for Nebraska. They looks like they have something to look forward to there. Oklahoma State doesn't do a spring game, so they just kind of had another practice. I think they should take the Lane Kiffin approach and just have like the Gundy games. I mean, for crying out loud, like trademark that, Mike Gundy. I'm not going to trademark it for you. Trademark that, the Gundy games, hunting, fishing, have like wild things going on in that stadium. Do it. But and then we saw, of course, Colorado, which, you know, their offensive line looked good in the spring game, but we'll see where they go there. And but they had some nice signs, like LeJonde Webster, probably Wester from FAU, looked good with Shedeur Sanders. They looked like they had a good kind of rapport there. But and they had a lot of good transfers that we didn't get to see, like that apparently all announced. Like we didn't really have a good read on the running back room. What do? They announced that Miami of Ohio's Rashad Amos has flipped his commitment from Mississippi State to Colorado. So we've had a couple of games to add to this, but kind of looking on and if you want to do on a macro level, that's fine. What are some of your bigger takeaways on the spring games?
Yeah, well, I think that the first has to be that Dylan Raiola is going to win the Heisman Trophy, of course, unless he finishes second to Arch Manning. Both of them are going to, of course, do it as freshmen. It's going to be crazy. I do think that, seriously, though, big picture, there are some really exciting young players in college football right now. Both at quarterback and also at receiver is another position where I'm really excited. Cam Coleman from Auburn is one who comes to mind. We mentioned Texas. Ryan Wingo, as a really high-end recruit, I think showed out in a big way. You know, I think that you have to be excited about not just the now of college football, but I think the future of college football as well. And, you know, not to make this too soapboxy, but like, that's why you have to hit on these high school recruits, man, because when they hit, I mean, the fact that you get potentially 3 years with Cam Coleman in the building at Auburn, that is a game changer. You know, 3 years, if you're able to keep him around with Dylan Raiola, that is a game changer potentially at that position. And so I really like what I've seen so far. I think that the other thing that this emphasizes to me is that this is going to be an incredibly balanced year in college football. We've talked about Ohio State and Georgia, and those are the two teams that probably have to be on the top of your board when you're talking about 2024 national champions. But I do think that looking across the board, I mean, Texas looks great. Not just Arch Manning, but when you talk about their depth on the defensive line, when you talk about what they've done in the secondary, they added Andrew Makuba to the mix from Clemson. Like, I really like what they've got going on there on both sides of the ball. It's taken some time, but I think that it's paid off. Similar deal, right? Like, you talk about Oregon. Oregon plays this past week. Dylan Gabriel is everything that you hope from him so far, and they've still got Dante Moore waiting in the wings as well. There are just so many good teams right now. LSU is one that I think should be pretty improved heading into this upcoming year. Miami, with all the additions that we just talked about. This is going to be a really competitive year in college football, I think. And in a lot of ways, like, last year was the perfect setup for the 12-team college football playoff, because you had 12 teams, in my opinion, that could have won playoff games. It was a competitive year. And multiple teams deserve that. And we got the ultimate injustice, which was Florida State getting left out of the field. So I think that college football, from an on-field product standpoint, is in a great place. And I think that the spring only emphasized that for me.
Yeah, I completely agree with you on that. And it's interesting to see, particularly as we move forward. You know, one thing I did get a sense of, and this is the Big Ten finally kind of, in my mind, coalesced to what I confirming something I was loosely assuming, I'm more confident of this, and that is that I think, especially if they're seeing Oregon spring game, that it's going to be Ohio State and Oregon are going to be the two main contenders to win the whole thing and take pole position, frankly, on the college football playoff. It's going to be exciting. That game where Ohio State, and I forgot what week it is, they're going to be heading into Autzen Stadium. That is going to be probably a battle of undefeated, and could be a game that we see repeated at least one more time in that Big Ten championship game. I'm absolutely looking forward to it. But, you know, one thing I am going to caution in Miami, sorry, the conversation about Miami keeps coming up here only because so many of these transfers are coming in kind of late for them. I mean, Cam Ward came in late. Obviously, now they just got the great running back late. Who knows who they're right now. We're recording this on Monday, and Tuesday midnight, I believe, is when the actual portal window, the spring portal window, actually closes. There is a chance we're going to get a fury of portal activity, not necessarily the super name brand players, but guys who could make a difference are going to suddenly come loose because they've been maybe, I'm not going to say tampering, but they may have been having some side conversations with potential teams. From what I understand, I mean, they have to file their paperwork by the end of Tuesday night. And then perhaps by Thursday, we'll hear some of the final guys who moved where they're going to end up. So it's going to be interesting to see how all of this finally shakes out and we see where players are. Is that part of the strategy, Washington waiting so long for the spring game? I mean, you can't have, like, no, you have a depth chart. Oh, la-di-da. You don't, you're playing after all of this happens. But it's going to be interesting to see how some of this final bit of shuffling takes place. But I'm excited to see it. And that's the spring game, seeing these young players. You touched on so many of the great guys. I mean, those were all players that were hot on my mind here. It's fun to see who is the real deal and who is a bit of fool's gold. I know we talked about that in previous weeks. Because as I said, like, wow, Colorado's offensive line looked like it was improved. Like, okay, great. USC's defense looked a little bit better. Oh, okay, great, cool. You know, again, as I've said, that's why I'm absolutely looking forward to USC versus LSU in the opener in Vegas. Because we're going to see whose defense actually might be looking a little bit better. Or we'll end up with the classic fiasco. If it turns out maybe both were bad, we saw them against an offense that wasn't this good. My goodness, I can't wait. I get so thrilled about how these spring games work out. Well, any other final thoughts on the spring game, or should we go ahead and wrap this one up?
No, I think that more than anything else, I'm just actually ready for some of these teams to kick off against each other. I do not want to keep talking about whether Colorado's offensive line in spring means anything. I'm sick and tired of it. I do not want to talk about whether USC's defense is fixed. I don't want to keep talking hypothetically about Ohio State's quarterback battle. I'm ready for business, man. And unfortunately, we've just got another 4 full months to wait.
We'll make it. I know we can make it. We're almost there. Well, I wanted to take a second to thank all of you for listening to us. I wanted to thank our producer, Joey Aliberti. Be sure to like, rate, and subscribe wherever you get your podcast. You can find us on X and TikTok at CFB Survivor Show. He's Sean J. Araja. You can find his work at CBSSports.com and at Sean J. Araja on X and TikTok. I'm Bob Akairi. Thanks for joining us.
The College Football Survivor Show, where playoff survival is always on the line.